You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
We're talking about Syria all this hour, trying to get behind the headlines, the rhetoric, and the UN resolutions. And we want to get your thoughts about the news coming out of Syria. You can reach us at 8778-MY-TAKE. But to understand that country, you also need to understand the family of Bashar al-Assad. Richard Galpin is a correspondent with our partner, the BBC. He reports on how the Assad family has been able to hold on to power for more than 40 years.
Outside the Syrian embassy in London, another demonstration by opposition activists calling for President Bashar al-Assad to resign. These Syrian protesters hope to see an end to a regime which they allege has always ruled by terrorizing its own people. It was Hafez al-Assad, Bashar's father, who started the family dynasty becoming president in 1971. Under his authoritarian rule, the country stabilized, his Arab nationalism and tough stand on Israel winning respect at home and in the region. But he also proved extremely ruthless with his own people, as witnessed in the city of Hama, where at least 25,000 were killed by the security forces following an uprising by the Muslim Brotherhood.
I swear by Almighty God to keep honestly.
When Hafez al-Assad died 12 years ago, it was a smooth transition to his son Bashar, an ophthalmologist who'd never really expected to become president. At first, he appeared to be a reformer, but then reverted to his father's tried and tested ways of maintaining total control. Now faced with a serious uprising, he too has ordered the security forces to crush it at any cost, it seems.
That's Richard Galpin, correspondent with our partner, the BBC. And joining us now, Daniel Shiro, professor of international politics at the University of Washington and author of Modern Tyrants. Daniel, thanks for joining us. And you're the author of Modern Tyrants. I wonder if you think tyrant is an appropriate word to describe Bashar al-Assad.
Absolutely. Any president who orders a wholesale massacre of his people, I think, could be categorized that way.
So in your book, you separate out different types of tyrants according to the ways that they use to control their people. What type of tyrant is Bashar al-Assad?
Well, as your correspondent just said, the Assad family started off, or his father started off, with an ideology. There was the Ba'athist Party. It was nationalist. It was socialist. But it's really turned into a kind of a mafia family rule, and they operate that way, and they have been for quite some time. They're utterly ruthless, and they and their cronies, and mostly people who are part of the Alawite sect, have all the benefits, and so it's become a really corrupt sort of a crime family that ruthlessly holds on to a country.
So Daniel Shiro, as David Sanger suggested earlier, is there no negotiation with a regime of this type?
Probably not, because aside from the fact that they run this operation this way, they run their country this way, they are supported by a significant number of people, namely the Alawite minority, and also some of the other religious minorities, of which there are many in Syria. The Christian community is quite worried about what would, which is substantial there, is quite worried about what would happen if the Muslim Brotherhood took power in Syria. The Druze, another religious minority there, are worried about that. So the Assad family isn't just the immediate family. They do have support from a minority, but a very substantial minority, and those are the people who have the heavy weapons. And if they lose power, they're very endangered. So they're not there. I don't think there is any room for negotiation. I think it's going to be a civil war. It is a civil war, and it's just going to get worse.
Daniel Shiro, professor of international politics at the University of Washington, author of Modern Tyrants. And the uprising in Syria is obviously the most serious threat, certainly to Bashar al-Assad, perhaps to the entire Assad dynasty. But you don't get to this position without some friends in the international community, and it might be stretching to say that Russia is a friend of Bashar al-Assad. But there is a question on that point of why Russia has not supported the UN resolution to condemn Bashar al-Assad and his government. Joining us now, Nicholas Gvozdev, professor of national security studies at U.S. Naval War College. And Nicholas, many are saying that Russia has not supported the UN resolution because they have protests in their own country and they don't want to support intervention against a sovereign government. Is it as simple as that?
That's the start. But it isn't limited to that. Certainly the Russians have concerns about sovereignty. They have concerns about intervention. But they also have important economic relations with Syria, with the Assad family, with the regime. The only Russian military base outside of post-Soviet territory is in Syria. They have concerns, as your last guest alluded to, strong ties between the Russian Orthodox Church and the Orthodox Church in Syria, and real concerns about what would happen to the Christian minority in Syria if Assad falls. All of these are factors that come together. And then there are factors outside of the immediate considerations of Syria. The discussion on the UN resolution takes place amidst a deterioration in U.S.-Russia relations. And concerns about what happened with Libya, and also concerns about what might happen with Iran. So it's not simply the immediate facts of what's happening in Syria, but larger geopolitical considerations as well.
Which means it's highly unlikely that Russia would change its mind.
It doesn't look likely that they would change their mind, especially with any resolution that calls for Assad to step down. The Russians have made it clear that they're happy to broker negotiations, but as your last guest also correctly pointed out, it doesn't look like there's much room for negotiation between the regime and the opposition.
That's right.
And so we do move into this condition of civil war.
Nicholas Gvozdev, professor of national security studies at the U.S. Naval War College, thank you so much for joining us. We're talking about Syria all hour. Sarab al-Jujakli, co-founder of the National Alliance of Syria. We've got about 30 seconds left, but as I understand it, according to the opposition, there is no negotiation on the point of Bashar al-Assad leaving power, right?
Yeah, exactly that. There is no negotiation with this Assad family dynasty. That's why we've seen it to be such a violent, bloody bloodbath at this point. All or nothing. It's an end game. And that's why from day one we saw bullets in the streets.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.